right, welcome back to The White Voice, episode number 42 here on thewhitevoice.com, the White Voice Network. Joining us for the first time in probably about 2 years, far too long, is Harold Covington. Now, Harold has written so many books, I've lost track of how many, he'll have to remind me. Hill of the Ravens, he has the White Book, which has the Constitution in there. He has Freedom Sons, a whole bunch of Northwest white migration books. And we're going to be discussing these plans with him, especially in wake of the failed experiment up in Leith, North Dakota, where, let's just say, going on television shows, screaming the N-word and so on and so forth is not going to attract the right kinds of people, and it didn't. So, Harold Covington, you were pushing the Butler plan. Get into what that is. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm able to sit up and take a little nourishment from time to time, Joe. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. So you've been pushing the plan for a while. You have your own podcast, northwestfront.org, Radio Free Northwest. I try to tune in as much as possible. I definitely was tuning in as the whole thing in Leith was unfolding, as you can imagine. I'm sure your traffic was way up around then. But you're pushing, why don't you tell the audience real quick what exactly you were pushing for the white people of this country?
Well, it had been known for many years as a Northwest imperative. I did not make this up by any means. If you want to be really esoteric about it, you could say that the idea of an independent, free, and white nation in the Pacific Northwest goes all the way back to the days of Aaron Burr and General James Wilkinson, who wanted to set up their own country in what was then the Louisiana Purchase. In the 1940s, there was a move in Northern California to establish Northern California as a separate state called the State of Jefferson. Even then, the white people of Northern California were being pushed around by those Mexicans in Los Angeles and that shower in Sacramento, and they didn't like it. Unfortunately, World War II interrupted there, and then later on, as you know, there were this Pastor Butler in Idaho and a number of other people who have advocated a migration of racially conscious white people to the Pacific Northwest, similar to the Great Trek of the Boers in South Africa, who fled from British rule in the 1830s. The idea being that racially conscious white people, the last reserves of what you might call normal people on the North American continent, need to gather in one place, politically and economically and culturally separate themselves from this shower of excrement. I don't know how blunt I can be on your program, but we all know what it's a shower of that we live in every day. And the only alternative for white survival is physical and political and economic separation from this system. Now, we can't do this on an individual basis. A lot of people think that Northwest migration means going up here and running off and hiding in a cabin in the North Woods someplace. Ask Randy Weaver how well that worked out for him.
Oh, yeah.
And a number of other people. You can't do it. The system will not allow individuals or small groups or families to opt out of the system. No one is allowed to opt out. Everyone has to march in lockstep. Everyone has to stay glued to that TV. Everyone has to shout in the 2 minutes hate. And in order for us to achieve any kind of separation, any kind of political and economic and cultural independence that would lead to our racial survival into the 22nd century, we are going to have a country of our own. I know that there's a very popular mantra going around in the movement that anti-racist is a code word for anti-white, and that is very certainly true. We came up with a mantra of our own a while back, and we were kind of accused by some people of trying to replace the first mantra, and that's not at all the case. It's just that we feel that this sort of slogan of ours is more apropos to the Northwest Front and to the ideal of a independent, sovereign white nation in the Northwest. Our mantra, if you want to call it that, is if white people had a country of their own, this wouldn't be happening.
And that's applicable to so many different things, whether it's race and crime or mm-hmm. economic terrorism. And look, I try to help out the mantra crowd, too.
It's applicable to anything.
Yeah, it is. And it's frightening.
Any piece of mess that you see out there, you take a look at it and you say, you know, if white people had a country of our own, this wouldn't be happening.
Yeah, and I think that's something that, if anything, at least gets people, and you and I both know, the first step in any kind of collective consciousness is just awareness, making it clear that we could talk about these things. Now, something you talk about on your show that I found very important, this was before the whole Leith thing exploded, if you're comfortable talking about it, and I've interviewed...
The whole which thing?
The whole Leith thing in North Dakota.
Yeah,
I interviewed Cobb. He told me a year before this all happened, hey, you know, we're going to start this. If you want to take some land, I'll give it to you. And I thought about it, you know, as a young guy, why not? You know, get a fresh start somewhere. You promised a job. I mean, it kind of sounds like American History X recruiting, but hey, I mean, what the hell? So they did this. And something you're very big on in your podcast and your correspondence you have working with you is white character, and something that really, really made me excited when I listened to one of your podcasts was, and you always say, old Harold is going off on a lecture and a rant and a rave. But this was a great rant and rave where you said that there is a certain code of conduct or behavior that white people are expected to exhibit. And you call it white character. We call it the white standard. You basically can't blame American Africans for behaving the way American Africans behave and then go out and behave similarly. So what is the difference between what you were pushing and what happened in Leith? And explain to us this idea of white character and white standard from your perspective.
First off, I don't want to dump on Mr. Cobb right at the moment. He's got troubles enough of his own. I disagree with what he did for the simple reason that it didn't work. One of my main objections to the white nationalist movement over the past 60 years or so is that we are great at providing absolutely classic examples of how not to do it. It's like we trip over our own shoelaces every time and we just never seem to learn. Mr. Cobb repeated a number of these errors, and beyond that, I'm not going to criticize him. If you'd like to say he's got troubles enough, I believe he's still in jail and all that sort of stuff. But
Harold, to keep it honest here, you said, and truly so, you said when you get your butts here, you become a productive member of your community. You don't draw attention to yourself. You don't become a circus show. I certainly guarantee, regardless of how we feel about 1940s Nazi memorabilia, you're not in favor of putting up signs and swastikas as soon as you pitch your tent.
Well, which is why we don't do that here. Mm-hmm. Now, another thing about, again, Mr. Cobb, and this is not just Craig Cobb I'm talking about. Craig Cobb, among other things, was what we refer to here in the NF as a shortstop. He started wandering in a general northwesterly direction, but he stopped short. Now, there are a lot of people who want to migrate to a whiter area, live freer. Okay, fine. There's nothing at all wrong with that. That's certainly part of the motivation for coming to the Northwest. But Mr. Cobb stopped in North Dakota, which is, again, understandable because North Dakota, with its shale oil, is about the only economically viable area left in the country. A lot of people are going out there for jobs. Okay, I understand that. But there are people who start to migrate northwest, and then they get distracted or sidetracked, and they short-stop. They're on stop short. They stop in North Dakota, South Dakota, Salt Lake City, Utah is another favorite sort of short-stop area, Colorado, places like that, because they get out there, they like the country, and they say, hey, what can I stay here? Well, our homeland that we've allocated in the NF consists of 3.5 states, so actually about 3 1/3 states, Washington, Idaho, Oregon, and the lights just went out here. Washington, Idaho, Oregon, and the western third of Montana, west of Interstate 15. So, are you still there, by the way?
Yeah, I'm here. So you have a nice chunk. It's not...
And the lights just came back on. Okay. Oh. I mentioned in the earlier email, it's kind of snowy and blowy out here.
No, you sound just fine. No worries. So you have a nice...
Hopefully it won't affect the phones. Anyway. Yeah. All right. Okay. Anyway, so that's the first thing. Craig was a shortstop. I come to the homeland. But one of the things I tell our new migrants, and we're starting to get them now, it's getting to the point where almost every week on Radio Free Northwest, I welcome a new migrant to Idaho, Montana. That's where they've been going lately. But I tell our new migrants here to the homeland that you have to blend in. We cannot have the local people think that they're being descended on by a bunch of nutcases from outside who are going to do things and brandish firearms in the air and run around screaming white power and acting like skinheads from the big eastern cities, which doesn't really cut it out here in the West. And so that was another problem and something we have to do. We have to come here and we have to win over the locals. We have to convince the local people who were born here and who live here that we are not enemies, that we're not trying to take them over or anything like that, and that we are right. And before you can communicate with someone and persuade them and convert them, if you will, you have to put yourself on a credible basis of communication with them. You can't look strange or look odd or behave strangely or...
You have to act the part of a white man.
Yeah, right. You can't start right out from the starting gate by confronting them with symbols and ideas and terminology that they have been conditioned from birth to reject. And this is why I no longer wear the costume. I no longer wear the swastika. I'm a National Socialist. I was a National Socialist when I first started with the Old American Nazi Party. I still am. But I have come to realize that the simple fact is it just doesn't translate from the 1930s.
It's not a winning message, and I think that's what far too many fail to understand, and I think that's troublesome. So we have a situation here. Obviously, the demographics are changing. Let's talk a little bit about the area in which you're pitching your flag. And we have Angelo, our co-host here. He's on the East Coast, like me, from Jersey, young guy. Angelo, you're there, right?
Yeah, I'm here, Joe.
So let's talk to Mr. Covington here for a minute. Young guys like us, Harold, what do we have to look forward to? Say we, and I know you're always telling people you need to get your asses out here. Something like, when you think of the West, you instantly think Silicon Valley, Starbucks, high suicide rate. What promise is there? And I'm talking about promise economically, romantically, with women, even, which is very important, as we both know. What is there to look forward to for us?
Okay, first off, the coastal Northwest, at least, has a reputation for being a very blue area, a very liberal area, and it's true insofar as Washington and Oregon are blue states. Idaho is a very red state. In fact, in Idaho, basically, I think possibly because of Pastor Butler giving the place a racist reputation, there has been a kind of a flight to parts of Idaho, which has turned almost the whole state Republican. But the liberal reputation that the Northwest has is due to the presence of two large megalopoli, Portland and Seattle. And the result is, it's kind of like New York State being constantly outvoted and the tone constantly being set by New York City. Mm-hmm. Outside of the greater Seattle area, and outside of the greater Portland area, rural Oregon and Washington are about as conservative and very white places as you'll ever find. It's true that in the actual census figures, right now the figures for both states is only about like 83-85% white. That looks bad on paper, but again, you have to bear in mind, we're talking here about Portland and Seattle. Now, a lot of people probably will have to come to the general vicinity of Portland and Seattle because of the economic. The main thing that I tell young white people who ask me about beginning their trek to the Northwest is, I say, the first thing you need to do is get a marketable skill. If you come here and you're completely unskilled and you're going to have to compete with the local people for burger flipping jobs, janitorial jobs, etc., well, that can be done. Mm-hmm. It's just like anywhere else. When you come here, you're going to have to clean yourself up, get your resume updated. You're going to have to get out there and hustle, look for a job. But it can be done. The economy here is in much better shape than the national average, I can tell you that. We have never had any migrant who came to the Northwest in any kind of state of proper preparation at all who has lasted longer than, say, well, it took them about a month or less to get a job, put it that way. In my case, when I first arrived in 2002, I was hired the first place I applied. Admittedly, the economy was a bit better back then because the Republicans ran, but...
But you were still a middle-aged man. A younger guy, maybe with a college degree going in there, might have a better chance of, it's harder for people who are middle-aged to get employment than younger people.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Age discrimination is a definite factor. But one thing I tell young people, even, basically, don't dick off in school. Get a trade. Learn to do something with your hands. Carpentry, be an electrician, be a plumber, even an IT hardware guy. Learn to fix the rich man's toys, and you will always work. Everyone needs a marketable skill that they can, if necessary, support themselves and become functional in society with. If you can do something, do it well and do it cheaper than the next guy, you will always work and people will not...
You won't be competed.
On a paycheck, yeah.
It's really supply and demand in terms of if you got the right skills, you're going to get the right jobs. Now, let me ask you this. How about the property values out there? I mean, I was looking at some properties in Indiana and I'm talking gorgeous houses for less than 125 grand. Now, obviously, just like in any part of the country, it's going to be more expensive in the cities. But let's say suburban areas, what kind of property can you look to buy, something with your dog to run around on and raise a nice family?
Some of the suburbs of Seattle and Portland are beautiful places and quite livable, but precisely because this is one of the nicer remaining places in the country to live, precisely because the Northwest is one of the whiter remaining places in the country to flee from, if you will, the property values in the larger urban areas are going to be fairly high, but not anywhere near as high as, say, the East Coast. I don't know if you heard AJ a few weeks ago on our Radio Free Northwest. He came out here and he's been pricing houses and higher than it would be, say, out in eastern Washington or eastern Oregon someplace, but compared to where he comes from in New York, he's over the moon.
And definitely taxes, car insurance is probably much cheaper. You can probably
Everything. I believe you're in outside New York City, aren't you?
I'm in New York City.
Oh, okay, right. Well, compared to New York City, everything is better. But no, really, according to AJ, the prices on everything, car insurance, rent, housing of all kinds, property values, groceries, everything is just incredible. He's, like I say, he's over the moon about it.
How's the...
This is actually not one of the really less expensive areas of Washington to live in because we're fairly close to Seattle. Now, if you're looking for cheap land, yes, it's definitely available out in the eastern parts of, say, Washington, eastern parts of Oregon, large parts of Idaho. There is still cheap land available. Ironically, one of the few places where property values and land prices have risen has been northern Idaho since Pastor Butler was more or less run out. And I've always had a theory that that was engineered by a certain real estate tycoon who wanted his, you know, property values to rise. Because, like I said, northern Idaho is now kind of a mecca for right-wing conservative types.
Yeah.
Just like western Montana is now becoming kind of a mecca for a lot of kind of extreme right-wing types, that Christian evangelical type and so forth and so on. I won't get into that. Cheap land is still available, but again, the cheaper the land, the farther away it's going to be from amenities.
Yeah, and places to work.
I mean, you need to function.
Yeah, you don't want to be spending $400 a month on gas just to get to work. That's part of the problem. So, Angelo, you have anything for Harold before I move on with other questions?
Yeah, I have a quick one. I mean, when you say 85% white, do you mean, like, you know, I know a lot of these consensus out there when they get, you know, they tell you a number of a certain state, how many people are white. I mean, We've John King, you know, he's done reports on the thing that when they say white, it could be Egyptian, Middle Eastern. Are you saying 85% white, like white?
Well,
European?
I'm going by the 2010 census, and God knows really what that breaks down to. I will tell you this. I've been around the Northwest in the cities. I'll take Seattle as an example because that's the city I'm nearest to, but I've been through other cities. There is more of a substantial black population than there was when I was first here 15 years ago, but blacks are still very much a minority here. There are blacks concentrated around the military installations like the Joint Base Lewis McChord, so forth and so on, obviously, but that's military. In Seattle, the most prominent minority are Asians of various kinds. But even so, the cities here are much, much, much whiter than anything you will see in California or the East Coast. Every time somebody comes here, they freak. Say if they come from the East, from New York City or from Florida or from Texas or someplace like that, they come, you know, I'll pick them up at the airport, they'll pull up outside the house and they'll just say, my God, you know, ever since we came here, we're looking around and we see all these white people everywhere. We pulled into a McDonald's. And there was all white people working in a McDonald's, my God. And for many people, for coming from other parts of the country, it's been years since they've seen something like that. They'll say, we drove by a road crew doing highway repairs, and it was all white men.
Yeah, and that's something you don't see out here.
It just freaks them.
You can't. Yeah. You can go to a Burger King and not see a white face in the damn place. Let's talk politics for a minute, Harold. Obviously, I think you and I think, you know, we understand nationally our goals are not going to be achieved politically. But I always say locally, you know, we can change ordinances once we get into the state houses and so on and so forth. Now, we all know it'll eventually come down to something bigger that I'm sure we can get into another day down the road, something that a war without ballots, let's just say. But politically speaking...
Well, read my novels for that.
Read, just saying hypothetically, you know, kind of a blueprint. Politically speaking, is there any political goals of the Northwest Republic? And what are you doing to put these into place? Or do you have to wait a little bit to get more of a voting bloc? What is the political process of the NF?
Okay, well, right now what we're doing is, and I'm laying this out in the fifth edition for the party manual, which I'm working on right now. The plan is to begin not only with general propaganda and radio shows on the internet and so forth, like most other groups do, but we're building communities here in the Northwest. We define a white nationalist community as 12 or more non-dysfunctional adult white nationalists who live within half an hour's drive of one another and who interact regularly off the internet. One of our main goals is to create these off-internet communities so that we've got real people interacting with real other white people. The internet has been a very mixed blessing, in my opinion. Then we have the unit, which will be three active people who are functioning as in what we call a trouble trio, which is, I won't get into all this, but right now we're trying to build an infrastructure here in the Northwest of real, honest-to-God people, human beings who actually physically live here. It's been hard. I'm not going to deny that. It's been hard convincing people, but I think more and more people are finally beginning to wake up and they're saying, hey, my God, you know, this Northwest Front thing, they're right. They're the only people with an idea. And as I mentioned earlier before we went on live, we are starting to see some motion in the migration field. Almost every week now on Radio Free Northwest for the past couple of months, I have been welcoming new migrants home. A lot of them are ending up in Idaho and Montana and some here.
There's certainly a grand growing consensus. Now, I want to save that for the end because that's really important. Let me ask you about, I know sometimes you get on Obama. Now, you know, I think most people that are on our side of the microphone understand he's a tool and what have you, but he's a great marketing ploy for us. This Obamacare, everything that's going on, I know you've covered that on your podcast. How do you feel about the man in the White House and what he's done for us and what he's doing to the country and just in broad terms?
Well, to simplify things, we'll just assume that he is in some way in charge in the White House. I actually like using terms like Obama and Democrats and so forth because that gives the enemy a nice, simple face that white people can perceive. Evil now has a black face, or at least a caramel-colored face in the eyes of most white people, which is good. Now, of course, you and I both know it's probably a lot more complicated than that. I personally question to what degree, if any, Obama actually does call the shots and dictate policy, but we won't get into all that now. Let's just assume for the sake of argument that Obama is indeed HNIC at the White House now. I don't know if I'm allowed to use the N-word on here. But what he's doing is he is beginning to rule for the first time as an actual dictator, which is something no previous president, even Clinton and Bush 2 and Bush 1 and the worst presidents we've ever had, with the possible exception of Roosevelt, have never gone this far. The turning point came in 2011 when Congress twice rejected the so-called DREAM Act, and so Obama just implemented it by executive decree. He not only did an end-run around Congress, he openly defied Congress. He, in essence, passed into law by his own signature on a piece of paper, something that Congress had twice rejected. Now, that right there is totally, utterly, completely unconstitutional. It is an impeachable offense, and yet nothing was done. So what's happened is Obama is like a dog that started killing chickens. He knows now that it can be done. And he knows that nothing will be done about it. There will be no accountability. He knows he can get away with it. And so he is more or less ruling by decree now. He has passed decrees on things like gun control, which, again, have been openly rejected by Congress. Frankly, Congress is becoming irrelevant, except in one sense. Yeah, I say if the Republicans can somehow recover the Senate in 2014, there is just a faint possibility that the Republican House and a Republican Senate, between the two of them, just might have the balls to impeach him. But there's no point in impeaching him if you can't get the conviction in the Senate. So, I can understand why the House Republicans haven't tried to impeach Obama. There's no point.
Yeah.
They could never get a conviction in the Senate.
They're just waiting out the process. I mean, if anything, the House Republicans serve the purpose of kind of counterbalancing what he's doing. And it's amazing. Like you said, he's starting to rule with the iron fist, and now he's a lame duck. He can do whatever he wants. Or maybe he's not a lame duck. We'll see if term limits are the next thing to go.
Yeah. Well, he might try for a third term, or he could be he's decided to be acquiescent and just warm the seat for Hillary, which is, I think, the arrangement that was supposedly struck in 2008.
Mm-hmm. You think it would be the other way around, given the age circumstances? I mean, she's going to be a pretty old president if she gets elected.
A lot of them are old, and, you know, just because they're old doesn't mean they can't be vicious and tyrannical. You know, Khomeini was 81 or something when he came to power in Iran. But interestingly enough, in my novels, I talk about President Hillary Clinton. It'll be interesting to see if I have a gift of prophecy there. I hope not. I'd rather not be proven right at that.
We'll see that. Angelo, I got a couple more for Harold. What, you got something for Harold?
Yeah, I mean, this accountability that you speak of, do you think it's because the more this country becomes darker and darker, meaning the more non-whites jump over the borders and come from other countries, these people just really don't care and don't understand these things? And do you think that's really the main reason why this accountability is not being taken care of?
Well, essentially what's happened is the Democrats have created their own permanent voting underclass consisting largely of black illegal aliens, non-whites of various sorts, and I'm sorry to say a growing number of whites who have gone on various sorts of welfare, you know, Social Security disability and things like that, and, you know, they're food stamps and getting their Obama phones and their flat screen and basically become dependent on the government, and it's a patronage thing. Most of them, and certainly most of the non-whites, understand that as a payback for all the various government goodies they get, they are expected to vote for the ruling party. And so what essentially has happened is that America has become a one-party state right now. I personally predict that George W. Bush will be the last white male heterosexual president of the United States. I don't think the Republicans, frankly, are ever going to sit in the White House again because normal people are simply outnumbered. Whether the Republicans want it or not, they have become seen as the party of the dwindling white minority in this country. I personally would like to see them start acting like it, but they're not going to. There will probably be a split in the Republican Party between the conservatives and the rhinos, and that will, of course, completely, utterly obliterate any chance of the Republicans or any kind of normal white government returning to this country ever.
And that's exactly what they want. That's their divide and conquer strategy.
Yeah, exactly. It's like America is becoming similar to what Mexico was for about 60, 70 years when they were ruled by the PRI, the Party of the Institutionalized Revolution. What we're heading for in this country is a one-party state where the Democrats control everything. They always control the White House. They will eventually get back Congress, and the Republicans are just a little squealing minority out in the wilderness, and every 4 years they get trotted out to form a token opposition. Mm-hmm. And they must learn to be like good conservatives and lose like gentlemen.
Yeah. And that's the problem. I mean, that's what Mitt Romney was, the consummate gentleman. Yeah. Now, here's something.
Romney was the ideal candidate. He fought the good fight, and he lost like a gentleman. And we've got to stop being gentlemen with these people.
You're right. Now, something you and I both have in common, for whatever reason or another, is that some people just refuse to like us. And I understand that. But something that I notice universally, including myself, people agree on about you, is just your unparalleled understanding of history. Now, I'm talking, Harold, economically, culturally, socially, on every aspect of a social realm. Have you ever, not have you ever seen, because you're not 1,000 years old, but are you aware of any circumstance, any historical time that is comparable to the times we're dealing with right now?
Well, ancient Rome obviously leaps to mind. Of course, it took Rome many, many centuries to fall, but then again, technology was not what it was in our day. Communication was a lot slower. Everything moved a lot slower, so it took longer for Rome to fall. I will say this. It is a historical fact, and this is not original with me. Adolf Hitler said this very succinctly in Mein Kampf. Multiracial and multicultural empires simply do not survive for any meaningful length of historical time. The Austro-Hungarian Empire collapsed after about a century of so-called multiculturalism, but again, we're talking about a time when technology and communication was a lot slower. This nonsense that the liberals come up with, that diversity means strength, is just horse manure.
Or how about Harold?
Diversity breeds weakness.
Just to interrupt real quick, how about these people who think they can gender bed nowadays? That's the sign of insanity, is it not?
Who think they can what?
These people who have these surgeries to remove or add or subtract genitals. I mean,
don't get me into the sex thing. My views to that make Phil Robertson look like a moderate.
But it just goes to show, it's unbelievable. Two more questions for you. A perfect segue into what you said about historical amounts of time and so on and so forth. How much time, and this is the real question we have. A lot of us are of the opinion that, all right, let's grab our bottle of Honey Jack, let's sip it smoothly, and let's watch the Titanic hit the iceberg and the USS Uncle Sol sink. How long do you think, reasonably, that we have before we start seeing what we'll just call, for other purposes on the show, profound change?
Right, okay. Well, first off, just as a quick aside, bear in mind I've been in this almost 40 years now, and in 1976, I heard people vowing and swearing that with the election of Jimmy Carter, the country was finished, America would be through by 1978, we were going to be all in the Mad Max world, etc., etc., and it didn't happen then. I'm always astonished at the ability of this country to survive the endless abuse that the liberals, the Democrats, and the racial minorities have put it through. All that having been said, I think it is finally starting to teeter towards the precipice here. What I think will precipitate it, it could be one of two things. First off, that lunatic Netanyahu could attack Iran. We could end up with closing the Straits of Hormuz due to a war in there and losing one-third of the world's imported petroleum. That would create such a mess that I don't think the United States could stand that kind of a blow, $18-$20 gallon gas. I personally believe that the United States military is no longer strong enough to defeat Iran and with all its other commitments and to force the straits back open. So that would be one way to precipitate a massive collapse. And the second way is some kind of failure of the money system when all of a sudden basically either the money runs out or more likely Ben Bernanke, or that new Jewish who runs the Federal Reserve, just keeps on printing and printing and printing in money, what they call quantitative easing. Mm-hmm. And eventually people just come to realize that they're playing with monopoly money, and basically the money is no longer worth anything, and all of a sudden the financial system collapses, and all of the bureaucrats and the muscle men, like FBI agents who are getting their direct deposit every month to pay them for their services and keeping Obama and the Democrats in power, all of a sudden they're not getting paid. Now, this essentially was what happened. This was what finally brought the Soviet Union down. They couldn't pay their army. So it could be one of the two things. It could be a combination of both.
But how about a time frame? I mean, I know it's dangerous to play with numbers.
I never predict time frames. People keep asking me, Harold, when will we have the Northwest Republic? When will there be white revolution? When will this work? And what I tell them is these things will happen when certain conditions pertain.
Okay, so let me knock it down. I really wasn't asking you when we're going to have the Republic. Yeah. But how much longer? I mean, Uncle Sam is, or I like to call him Uncle Saul, is on life support, stage 4 terminal cancer. How much longer until, I mean, like we just described, the conditions are unsustainable?
Like I said, normally, even a few years ago, I wouldn't even have gone this far.
Okay.
I will say this. I think the year 2014 will be very significant. From what I can tell from my observation of the financial system, it's, my God, that balloon has to burst sometime.
It's a lot more expendable than we thought.
Also, in the political system, I tell you this, another interesting development is, you're probably not old enough to remember when the Republicans and the Democrats were all just good old boys in suits sitting in there slapping each other's back in the Senate bar and all that sort of stuff. There is a lot of genuine hatred now between the Republicans and the Democrats and the conservatives and the liberals. And so the 2014 election is going to be nasty beyond belief. And I think the 2016 election is going to be one of the most vicious, brutal, and maddening and enraging in history. And it is entirely possible that at some point in time, I don't know how far I can go on this show, but
good.
It's entirely possible that once white people, normal white people, finally understand that we are outnumbered and that there is no more hope at the polls for us, and that from now on the plan is for us to live in a one-party state where liberalism and multiculturalism and all this mess is going to be crammed down our throats, and basically the liberals and the Democrats are in power and they're saying, we've got it and you ain't going to get it and we blah, blah, blah. It's possible, just possible, that finally, at long last, white people will become so enraged that they will finally take the guns out of the closet.
You're right about that.
It probably will not be organized. It probably will be something very spontaneous. But that's one thing you see. A spontaneous spark, a brush fire somewhere on this continent could set off a prairie fire.
And you can see, we've seen the Arab Spring. I don't think the American Spring is too far off. And you look, and I agree with you. I'm going to one-up you on the year, though. I'm going to say 2015, because then we'll really know where we stand, at least in terms of the political system. I mean, look, the economic system can implode any day now, but the political system is really going to be determined by what happens. If they maintain control and Obama keeps ruling with the iron fist, then 2015 is going to be the hell of a year. But I really think that they will try, like you said, try to slow down the process a little bit and give them the control of the House, the Senate, and so on and so forth. We've kept you for quite a bit now, and I'm sure you got other things to do. I got one last question for you, Harold. You've been at this for a while, not just nationalism, but this idea of a white republic for at least hardcore, I would say, for 10 years now. How does it make you personally feel, somebody who's dedicated his life, probably every woken minute to this, how does it make you feel to finally see the idea of white ethno-secessionism catching on? The white, you know, we need our own country, people, you know Nova Europa's out, I've wrote about it in my book, you've written plenty of books about it. How does it make you feel to finally see the white republic meme catching on?
Frustrated because it's not catching on fast enough. We are finally at a stage right now in the movement's history where we should have been 50 years ago. I have a reputation for bad-mouthing the movement's past and that sort of stuff, and to some degree that's deserved because there's a lot of stuff back then that deserves to be bad-mouthed. MUBIT's history is one of lost opportunities and dead ends, and we are having right now to do the sort of things by way of building infrastructure, by way of planning, by way of creating a basic propaganda line for the bulk of a revolutionized white populace. We are doing the things right now that should have been done 50 years ago, and it makes me mad as hell. But yes, you're right. Things are moving in our direction.
Better late than never. So, Harold, you got to start somewhere. And I think it's definitely moving on. Let me ask you this before we let you go. Where can people contact you? What are you up to personally? I want to hear about your books, your podcast, your website, okay. Where they can get literature, well, where they can contact you, the whole nine yards.
Okay. First thing people need to do if they're interested in creating a Northwest homeland for all of our people. I need to check out the party's website at www.northwestfront, that's all one word, northwestfront.org. www.northwestfront.org. Second thing they can do is they can email me at nwnet, that's nwnet, at earthlink.net, nwnet at earthlink.net, and I will be happy to send them a white book, which is a copy of our party's manual, and some literature, a copy of our monthly magazine, Northwest Observer, and so forth and so on. So that would be the first step. You need to get in touch with the party, check out the website. On the website, you will find pretty much everything you need to know. You'll find a copy of the Northwest Constitution that we propose for our new republic and all kinds of goodies. As far as the Northwest novels go, there are 5 independent Northwest novels. You can find details about them on the website, and also you can order them online from Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Libris.com, and so forth and so on. And I'll be glad to fill you in on those.
Fantastic. Well, Harold Covington, it's been a pleasure.
Okay.
You're listening to the White Voice on the White Voice Network.